Good morning. My name is Justin. I'm one of the pastors here at Christ City. It's great to be with you all. This week, I was talking to my mom. I try to call a couple times a week. The last few weeks have been kind of busy, so this was the first time in a while. Sorry, Mom. Just watching, probably. Normally, it's just a quick catch-up. You know, how's it going? How are you doing? What's the latest on X? How's yours and Dad's health? But this time, I had a particular question, which was, in what ways was I a challenging child to parent? Of course, not at all related to any challenges Carolyn and I are currently navigating as parents, just, you know, asking for a friend. She said, and I'm paraphrasing, you and your brothers, I have two older brothers, she said, you and your brothers were so different, and we loved each of you. She's so gracious and so diplomatic and so like my mom and so likely worn down over the three decades since she last had to parent me as a kid. But she did go back. She did go back, and I knew this was coming. She went back to my eating habits, and particularly around fresh fruit, okay? I didn't like eating fresh fruit as a kid. None of it. Apples, bananas, oranges, melon, mango, cherries, grapes, nothing. And I don't know where it came from, okay? Because I never made a conscious decision not to like fruit. Even as a baby, as a toddler, apparently before I could even remember my parents, when they would try to feed me fruit, I would refuse. Once I got old enough to negotiate with, fruit was an indispensable part of dinner. At least one out of apple, banana, orange. It was a rotation, A, B, O. I remembered it. That's how I remembered it. Each night, A, B, or O. I had to have one or the other. To make it easier for me and my parents, they would cut the fruit into small, bite-sized pieces. That's how much they loved me. And they would give me a small fork for just for the fruit. And I was not allowed to leave the table until I had finished. So I used to stall, and whine, and pout, and complain. And it makes me want to throw up. I don't like how it tastes, and I just don't want it. Not unlike anything my wife and I are hearing right now, actually. But I had to finish it at the dinner table before I could be excused, every night. A few nights a week, though, an opening was presented to me because my parents would go swimming. So they had to leave by a certain time, and my plate just had to be empty before they got back. Right? My plate just had to be empty. Now, in those days, and they still live there, actually, we lived on the second floor of an apartment building with a balcony right off of the dining room. It's convenient. Wait till they leave. Toss the orange slices off the balcony. Plate's empty. Worked like a charm for a few times. But one night, I got cocky. I acted too soon. I forgot that my parents' route to the car from our apartment took them pretty much right under the balcony. Now, fortunately, I didn't throw the orange slices on them, but they did notice orange slices exactly like the ones they had just cut for their youngest son on the ground beneath the balcony directly off of the dining room where they had just left said youngest son with said orange slices. My parents are pretty smart, y'all. No more orange slices off the balcony. Tactic number two that I tried was just to throw them away. Now, I could, put them in the trash. Now, I couldn't do that in the bedrooms because smell would be too obvious. Got to go with the kitchen trash. Can't just put it on top, too obvious. Drop it in there and then shift other trash on top of it to hide it. And that worked a few times. Till I got sloppy. And they saw that one little sliver of orange slice just sticking out. Tactic number three, flush them. Utilize the mechanism already used for getting rid of unwanted substances. That one was pretty foolproof, actually. But I think by that time, I was getting to the point where I recognized that I really should eat fruit, even if I didn't want to, because it'd be good for me or something. I share this as an example, one that is firmly enshrined into the Fung Family Hall of Fame and brought up often when we get together and reminisce, of knowing what I didn't want and doing everything in my power to avoid it. Desperation led to resourcefulness, even with occasionally sloppy execution. I knew what I didn't want, and I did everything in my power to avoid it. Now, what I was trying to avoid was actually good for me, which my parents knew, and so they did everything in their power to help me be healthy. Maybe you can think of an example from your own life of something you wanted and what you did to get there. Maybe it was a relationship with someone you were interested in. Maybe it was a job you had set your sights on, or an experience like a trip abroad or a concert or a sporting event that you saved up for. What about something you didn't want? You did everything you could to avoid it. Class? A public performance? Being alone? Sorry, was that too deep, too quick? The question I want to ask this morning, to begin this morning, is what are you committed to? What are you committed to? Well, if you're just joining us, welcome. Today is, as we've said, the fifth and final week of the Next Five preaching series and giving campaign. And last summer, we celebrated 5 years, the first 5 years of Christ City Church. And it prompted our leadership to consider what the next five might look like and how we might get there. The Next Five has two main purposes. First, it is to help us find our footing as a community after the worst of the pandemic, certainly on the financial front, but also in terms of energy and time, of volunteering and re-engagement into church community life. You know, we've only just passed the 20-month mark since we returned to meeting in person. We spent 18 months entirely online. We've only just passed that time of being back in person. The second main purpose of the Next Five is to coincide with and to support the rollout of our church's strategic plan, which we've been working on over the last few years. With the help of the various members of the strategic planning team, the elders landed on three priorities: transformational discipleship, helping people grow in their faith and become more like Jesus; inclusive welcome, cultivating a community where everyone feels accepted for who they are by us and by God; and collaborative justice, seeking to create and work towards a better world with and for others. We spent the last 4 weeks unpacking what each of those means for us in our context, what it has looked like for us as a church over the last few years, how we have embodied that, and dreaming about what could be, how we might continue moving in, moving toward the goodness and grace of God, the flourishing of God's kingdom in every life and every sphere of life. We set an ambitious target for ourselves, $450,000 over the next 3 years, seeking to increase our budget by a third so we could invest in these focus areas, so we could reinforce the work already done and prepare for the work still to be done, to shore up our savings, to support our staff team. This is how we discerned the Lord leading us. And let me be clear, the question that I pose, the question of what are you committed to? It's not about demanding loyalty to this church. That's why you should give. That's not what this is about. Instead, it's an invitation to you to consider your life, to consider your whole life. What are you committed to with your life? To whom is your life committed? I long for it to be for you and for me. I long for it to be Jesus. And I hope this church does get to be a part of your answer. In the first week, we talked about what could be. What could be? We drew inspiration from the early church in Acts 2, which immediately after Pentecost, when the Spirit came down, became a community bearing powerful witness to God through preaching the good news and generosity toward one another. It says they sold houses and belongings and gave to anyone who had need, and there were no needy persons among them. And we ask, what could be? What could be? We invited the Spirit of God to spark our imaginations, to spur us to soar above the rubble and the ruins of whatever trash and trauma we human beings have caused in our sin or suffered because of other sin. To dream of a better way.
a better world, a better church, a better life. Today, I want to make them move from what could be to what it will take to get there. From what could be to what it will take to get there. The scripture passage that came to mind as I was preparing for this week comes from the book of 2 Samuel in the Hebrew Bible. It's a story of David, second king of Israel, the greatest king of Israel. It comes from the last chapter of 2 Samuel, which takes place toward the end of King David's life. He is no fresh-faced shepherd boy anymore, chilling in the fields with his harp and sling, writing songs and just no responsibility. He's not there anymore. His hair is graying now. His back aches, almost certainly. His soul is tired. There are many years under his belt now. The memory of slaying Goliath the giant has long passed, as have his best friend Jonathan and his mentors, Samuel and Saul. In his past is also the time he abused his power to sexually exploit Bathsheba and to murder her husband Uriah. He was confronted about his sin. He repented. He's lost multiple children, including most recently his son Absalom, who launched a coup to depose him. Many years, many tears. And now, toward the end of his life, David makes another mistake. He decides to take up a military census. He says, so that I may know how many there are. As a young boy, David took on a heavily armed and heavily armored giant with nothing but a sling and a stone, saying, "You are coming against me with all of your weapons, but I come against you in the name of the Lord of the heavenly forces, and he will hand you over to me." Now, as an old man, he decides to count his armies, making a record of his own strength. And a plague falls upon the people as a punishment from God. Punishment from God upon the people because of David's actions. See, our actions don't just impact us, do they? That's particularly true for those in positions of leadership and authority, as we might attest to from, you know, a teacher who turned us off a subject when we were in school. For me, that was science. Might be a toxic work environment, or even the spiritual trauma we may still be healing from. The decisions of leaders have effects for those under them. But the principle applies more generally to all of us, because all of us occupy spheres of influence with loved ones, with family, friends, colleagues, anyone we encounter on the street or on the sidewalk or online even, where our actions impact others. What we say or don't say, what we do or don't do. And the greater the position of leadership, the greater the authority, the greater the potential for good or for ill. The king's actions have consequences for his people. Now, through a prophet named Gad, God offers David, who has quickly, again, acknowledged his sin, his wrongdoing, and has sought to protect his people from the consequences of his actions, God has offered him a remedy. It's to build an altar and make a sacrifice. And it's to take place at a particular location, the threshing floor of Arauna from Jebus. Now, there's an extended edition of this message where I talk more about the Jebusite tribe and who Arauna may have been and what threshing floors are and what the process of threshing involves. But none of that made it into this final cut. The important detail for us is that the threshing floor of Arauna from Jebus was where God instructed David to build the altar. Arauna offers the land to David for free. We don't know whether it's out of the goodness of his heart or whether it was an ancient Near Eastern negotiation tactic. We don't know. But it was David's response that came to mind as I was praying about this week, this Sunday. As the message paraphrase puts it, "I'm not going to offer God, my God, sacrifices that are no sacrifice." Or as I interpret it, "I won't give God what costs me nothing." I won't give God what costs me nothing. Everything worthwhile costs something. Being relationally healthy, it means learning both to be vulnerable and to have boundaries, and learning to discern when to do what. Being relationally healthy, it means spending time with loved ones. It means intentionally connecting. For me, that costs me my zoning out. It costs me my vegging out. It costs me my checking out. It costs me energy that I may not have properly budgeted or prepared for, being the introvert that I am. It costs me working through my impatience and my irritation and the ingrained habits that I learned dealing with conflict from my family of origin. Or to leave a better world for the generations to come. It means changing our consumption habits to live more sustainably. It means showing up for those in need, showing up for others, even if you don't feel like it's your battle or your struggle or your cause, because you know our fates as a human race and as all of God's creation are tied together. They're inseparable. This costs me my ignorant bliss. It costs me when I have to swim upstream against a flow that says you should be able to get what you want, when you want it, as soon as you want it, for as cheap as you want it. Everything worthwhile costs something. Comfort, convenience, control. But if you think about it, even the things that aren't worthwhile cost us something too. Because we're human beings with limited time and energy and resources. We can't be in two places at once yet. We only have so much money to give and so many causes we want to support. We only have so many hours in a day and so much to do, so many people to see, so many shows to watch. Which is why I think it's so important to ask ourselves, what are we committed to? Not just what are you against, like I was against fresh fruit as a kid, but what are you for? What do you give things up for? What are you willing to make sacrifices for? What is the hope and vision of life that motivates you? Is it worthwhile? Is it worthwhile enough to count and take on the cost? Everything costs something. Everything worthwhile costs something. And love always costs something. I said it in the first week of this series. We say it often here at Christ City. Love is what it comes down to. Loving God with everything we have, loving our neighbors, including our enemies, as we learn to love ourselves. That's not easy. It's not comfortable, it's not convenient, it's not controlled, but it is good, and it is right, and it is holy, and it is where fullness of life is found, where true life, where life with God is found, the most worthwhile thing. The next five is about the next 5 years here at Christ City, but it's about more than that too. I hope it's about the rest of your life, whether that's here at Christ City or not. I hope it's about the rest of Christ City's life as well. I hope it's about the shalom of our city and our world. I hope it's about love. See, if language of strategic priorities and strategic plans, it seems too gimmicky, too corporate, too non-spiritual, let me put them to you another way. With transformational discipleship, we're asking the question, who are you becoming? And we're hoping to answer more like Jesus, the one who was love incarnate, the one who showed us what the God who is love looks like, the one who showed us what we who are made in the image of the God who is love can look like at our freest, at our most transcendent, at our fullest, at our most mature, at our most glorious. And all of our relationships are touched, and all of the people around us are affected, and all of our work is transfigured. In inclusive welcome, we're asking the question, who are we becoming? And we're hoping to answer more like the body of Christ, more like the hands and feet of Jesus, more like the beloved community, more like a tangible expression of persons to and with and for one another, of the outrageous and extravagant embrace of God's kingdom across all the lines that have historically been used to divide and separate and oppress, of race and ethnicity and culture, of relational status and sexual orientation and gender, identity or expression, of socioeconomic status and educational attainment, and even where you call home. We want this community to be a home. In collaborative justice, we're asking the question, what is our world becoming? And we hope to answer, more like God's kingdom. We long to see and we work to see that loving kingdom come on earth as in heaven, the rule and reign of a loving God on full display in a world that is so in need, where goodness and grace and peace reign, where gun violence is no more and white supremacy is no more and homophobia and transphobia are no more and spiritual exploitation and religious exclusion are no more, where there are no more billionaires while people are starving and there are no more empty luxury condos while people are living on the streets, where we actually take care of the world we've been entrusted rather than exploiting it. When we commit ourselves to God, the God of love, the God who is love, the most worthwhile, all of our energy and time and resources then become ingredients to be worked together for love. Individuals who love better. A community that loves better. A world that knows and experiences God's love. Justice is what love looks like in public, as Dr. Cornel West would say. And the earth shall know God's name. All of the earth shall see the grace of our God. That's what could be. You see what I mean when I say these commitments are not just for the next five. What it will take for each of us and all of us is our commitment to God. Time, treasure, and talent, and energy, and resources. What it will take to accomplish this over the next five here at Christ City is giving, sure, but it's also volunteering. It's showing up. It's making yourself available to God and to others and to yourself. And if you needed a reminder to put down your phone once in a while and stop numbing or distracting yourself so you can be present to God and your own thoughts and feelings, this is it.
Yeah.
What it will take to accomplish something worthwhile here in us and through us is to allow ourselves to be stretched beyond what we've gotten used to. Spiritually, emotionally, relationally, financially, vocationally, professionally, maybe even geographically. Now, speaking of geography, the site on which God commanded David to build an altar, the threshing floor of Arana, the Jebusite, it shows up a few other times in the Bible. It shows up in 2 Chronicles. When David's son Solomon begins to build the temple, it is on the site formerly known as the threshing floor of Arana the Jebusite, up on a hill just outside the city of Jerusalem. We're told it had another name too, Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah shows up in Genesis when Abraham was tested, told to take his son Isaac and offer him as a sacrifice to God. And then 2,000 years after Abraham and 1,000 years after David, not far from that same hill, another one loved us so much that he gave his only son so that we might be redeemed, so we might be liberated and we might liberate others. so that we might live and point others to the one who is life. And so my encouragement to you, my invitation to you, my plea to you today is commit yourself to God and the flourishing of God's kingdom. Commit yourself to Jesus and the good news of the full, true life of love he offers. Commit yourself to the presence and the power of God's Spirit to redeem and remake and renew all things. You know, honestly, if everyone who calls Christ City home experienced a move of God's Spirit that stirred our hearts and affections for God, that inspired us to live more like Jesus in private and in public, that compelled us to see more of God's kingdom on earth in every sphere of influence we have, that grew us in love individually, communally, and embodied that in by justice in the world. If all of that happened, if we did all of that and we didn't hit our target, I would still rejoice. Because we would have been faithful. We would have been faithful. Faithful with ourselves, with one another, centering Jesus and his call to love. But today is also a commitment Sunday, and today is the day we close out this preaching series by coming together as a community to bring whatever God has laid on our hearts, to pledge over the next 3 years to set us up for the next five. When I kicked off this series 5 weeks ago, I acknowledged that that was only the second time in 13 years of ministry that I had preached about money and stewardship. I named my own baggage from seeing preachers and pastors emotionally and spiritually manipulate people for profit. I've tried to steer clear of those same tactics and strategies. I've wanted this series and this season to be a healing experience for us, as well as a learning one, as well as a stretching one. It's what I've asked God for. It's what I've prayed for. Over the last few weeks, what God has been stirring in me has been a boldness and a courage that is not my own. And I know that it is not my own because I hate conflict, and I hate asking for things, and I hate bringing up uncomfortable topics like money. God reminded me first of my life verse, Luke 12:48, where Jesus says, "From everyone to whom much is given, much will be required. And from the one to whom much has been entrusted, even more will be demanded." Our actions impact others, whatever spheres of influence may be ours to steward. Second, God reminded me that if it's something worthwhile, you'll want others to participate in it as well. We love to share funny videos and memes and book and film and music and restaurant recommendations because we want others to partake in the goodness and joy of what we've gotten to experience, right? And so today I want to invite you to participate in what God is doing here at Christ City and what God will do here at Christ City over the next 5 years. There are many ways to do so. Many of them are found on your connection card, if that's helpful. Volunteering for a ministry team, joining a small group, serving at an outreach event, joining and investing in prayer and presence. But the tangible and specific invitation, at least one of them this morning, is to pledge to financially support this church, this community. I do want to share with you all that our leadership council, our elders, our staff, ministry team leaders, and small group leaders not only heard about the next five first, not only have been praying about the next five first, but also have stepped up first. Because of our leaders setting the example, we are already almost 15% of the way toward our target. Yeah, because our leaders prayed and discerned and listened to God, we're almost already, even before Commitment Sunday, we were already 15% of the way. Former Christ City members, friends of Christ City who live all over the country and all over the world have received the invitation, the call, and are beginning to respond as well. And I do believe it is the Spirit's stirring. I do. And I believe that whatever the Lord provides will be what we need. Now, you may be here attending, or you may be watching.
Maybe here for the first time, or you may have joined us midway through this series. You may still be checking out churches, and maybe it's a miracle you made it through the whole way when you realized you'd come on Commitment Sunday. It may be a miracle, but I don't think it's a mistake. Whoever you are, wherever you are on the journey, I hope you experienced God in a new way today. Practically speaking, there are several ways that we can respond this morning. First, if and as you feel led, you can fill out an X5 commitment card, pledge card that will be on your seat. In a moment, we'll have some time to respond. You can fill it out. You can drop it in the box that will be at the front. You can bring an offering that costs something. And we do it publicly, not to show off, but to be an encouragement to others. A gift for the good of the whole. Now, we won't judge anyone that doesn't drop a card in. It's not what we're about. We know that everyone is in a different situation. Some may already have pledged. Some may not be in a position to do so right now. This is not a competition. It is a community celebration. If you prefer, or if you're watching on YouTube, you can complete the pledge form online. There's a link and a QR code.